Welcome back to the podcast. Today, I've got my friend, Dr. Kathleen King here with me, the founder of Primal Trust. Kathleen, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Nathan, for having me.
So good to see you. We just spoke not too long ago, did a great interview with you all about Primal Trust. It was really cool to see more about that community and program you've created that's really helping people heal emotionally at a really deep level. Tell me about, your experience with emotional healing. Like, why is it still like taboo today for most people? Why do people still avoid it so much? You know, why is there not as much support for people? Why is it still, you're dealing with depression, anxiety, guilt, fear, resentment, you go see a psychologist, they prescribe you drugs, you don't get better, you get more depressed. And yet we have the root cause solutions, right? And we've had them for a long time. And yet so many people don't know about it, don't have access to it, think it's taboo, whatever, and just live their lives every day feeling that loneliness, that emptiness, that depression, that grief, that anxiety. We know it's deteriorating the immune system. We know it's tearing down the quality of life. And yet we have solutions for it right now. But what is it? People are afraid. They don't know about it. It's taboo. What do you think is going on?
I have a lot to say about this. And there's definitely some rabbit hole answers around why are we resistant to saying that what might be going on has an emotional root. To put it simply, we've been programmed out of that understanding. We've been programmed out of that innate intelligence that we have had for ages, that our body and our symptoms are messengers to be listened to, in that there are maybe generational issues, trauma issues, etc. But the medical system, they have zero training in this. And so all of the education that we are receiving, that the doctors have been receiving, at least, I mean, there might be getting some education now, but up until recent years, they have been educated out of it. So if it doesn't fit into that model of education, it's wrong. Or, they're afraid of getting kickback from their colleagues. And then those of us on the receiving end of that programming, these authority figures are telling us that the solution lies in pills and these other protocols. And so frankly, we have been deprogrammed out of our innate intelligence of how to have proper mind-body communication, as well as what the root cause is, which is emotional. It is a separation from self. I say all disease is a separation from self at its core. That's not taught in the medical system. So what happens, what I think happens is that because it's not in our programming and you have a real physical issue, to say that it has an emotional cause feels invalidating, and it makes you feel like you're crazy. And so the medical system has, the way the model is, it's like, oh, this is a psychosomatic issue. And that has a negative label because that's how we have kept the power in pills and in pharmaceuticals, et cetera, is to make the ego feel shame for actually taking the responsibility that is the core issue, which is the way that we are emotionally reacting to the world.
I think that's a good kind of overview and a good starting place. I do think there's a lot of hope. I mean, even in kind of, it's not mainstream yet, but in the conventional, let's call it a little more cutting edge, conventional understanding of kind of mind-body medicine, if you will, there is the biopsychosocial model of medicine, right? And it's, like I said, it's not mainstream yet, but it is a great foundation and starting place for people to think about. There's a simple graphic that kind of shows, this was Wikipedia, I just want to show this graphic, right? Mm-hmm. Biopsychosocial, right? It's the biological, the psychological, and the social. Now, when we look at it through a holistic approach, which is what I do and what you do, and the focus I've done for 17 years now in learning about health and well-being, is we add to this environmental, right, relational, which fits in social, but then you also have, the financial side, which absolutely affects the psychological and the physical. If you don't have enough money to take care of yourself with nutrition, that absolutely affects the biology, but then you also are struggling financially, it really hurts psychologically and emotionally. you know, which can affect your social. You have the environmental, you have the toxins, which affect the psychological and the biological. You know, they have the spiritual component as well, which they don't add in here. But this is a good framework for people to think about, and as a form of even some of conventional medicine today, is this biopsychosocial approach, right? Where we know, even beyond that, everything's connected. You're stressed out, it's going to affect your immune system, it's going to downregulate it. You're dealing with resentment, you're dealing with grief, you know, you're talking trash about other people. You get into a little bit of a negative mindset, right? You're focusing on gossip, if you will. You know, you're gossiping about other people. You're literally activating hormone response in your body that is hurting your body, and you very often don't even know it. Is that right?
Yeah, 100%. I think a lot of times, because people have come through trauma who end up getting sick, their trauma was an experience where they were invalidated at some point. Then they get these symptoms. And it's almost like if I'm saying this is due to emotional issues and I don't have a real, you know, if we're having them focus on the emotions versus these lab tests or whatever, it feels invalidating, much like the trauma, and the psyche is really resistant to continuing to feel gaslit about what happened. And I find one of the most important things that I do in my program is right away, how do we validate that you do have physical issues and it's possible that emotional causes are affecting your cellular biology and resulting in true physical manifestation? So it's the both and, it's not either or. And it's really interesting, this topic. I literally just had a person write to me yesterday, a high profile client. And she's healed from doing this mind body work, but she has a press interview and she said, I can't tell them that I did this mind body thing because that doesn't go over well. She's very much mainstream. She's like, how can I explain this in a way where they're going to socially accept me? So while we are making progress, it's still there. You know, she needs to find a way that the media is going to accept her without labeling her psychosomatic because she went through this process.
Yeah, that's sad, right? It's like we're worried about judgment, and rightly so, because of what are people going to think? On the other side of it, I do see more athletes opening up about it, like publicly about their depression, you know, actors opening up about it, about their drug addiction, depression, you know, suicidal thoughts. Like the more that we kind of mainstream it, if you will, destigmatize it. The more that you talk about it, the more that you share it, the more that we're open about it, the better it's going to be for everybody. Yeah.
And that really was my challenge to her. So what if the truth is a little destabilizing? You might actually help a lot of people. So yeah, good point.
Yeah, that's so true. And yet we're still dealing with censorship around the topic, which blows my mind, you know. If we mention the word suicide, we immediately get censored on YouTube and some other social media platforms, or you know, you get a warning put on it and they don't show it and promote it to other people, which blows my mind because that's a very real thing so many people are dealing with today and struggling with. And we could talk about it in a positive note with all the solutions in the world and really inspire and help people, and yet they still will flag it, censor it, and won't let it get out to people. Which is kind of crazy to me. I mean, I understand why they do it for our cancer content. You know, they have ties with the WHO and they have ties with large pharmaceutical interests, and they're just, you know, they have ties with Mayo Clinic and things like that, that isn't about helping people heal naturally, and there's a lot of money involved. Like, I get it. I don't agree with it. I obviously think it's completely wrong, and should be illegal, but they do it and get away with it. But in this case, it's very strange to me why they would censor something like that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that this censorship leads to lack of resources that are there and understanding and even normalizing that process because, you know, a lot of times with suicide, it starts with ideation, which is actually pretty common. And when people realize that that can be a common thing, the shame gets released. And with that shame release, there's often more receptivity for support through the process.
Yeah, and I've very rarely talked about it publicly, but I did try committing suicide when I was a teenager, And so I've been through that, you know, having the thoughts about it, the ideas about it, the feeling of like, what's the purpose of living? My life should just end. I have no more reasons to live. And actually slit my wrist with a knife and fell asleep. And next day woke up, and it was actually like a miracle that I woke up, and I apparently didn't cut deep enough, and it basically like started to heal over right away. And then that next morning they were taking me off to jail as a 15-year-old. So that was kind of the impetus, was like I crossed the line too many times, and for me it was just like my life's over. And so I know what that feeling's like, and I know what it feels like to not have any purpose to live anymore, and to, but we know that's not the solution. We know there is a solution for healing the trauma that leads to those ideations and the trauma that leads to the attempts. We know that there are good solutions. We know that everybody has a purpose to live. It's just helping them find it, right? And so I know how challenging it'd be for people out there who are tuning in, who are having, maybe have had thoughts about it, or who are just struggling, depressed, really feeling like, what's the point? I mean, what would you say to people who are having those kinds of thoughts?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm so sorry that you had to have that experience, and it sounds like it's really led to a lot of growth and the ability to serve. And what I'll say to people like that is that there are parts of us that want us to come out of our pain so badly. They're often called firefighter parts in internal family systems work or parts work. These aspects of us so much want to protect us with in a benevolent manner that sometimes their solution is a permanent solution so that you never have to feel that level of pain again. But it's only one solution. And that part is only one perspective. And so those of you that are wrestling with that permanent solution, it's tricky to help other parts come online and feel like there's resources, there's a way forward, because ultimately what's happening is you're wanting to escape the pain and you don't know how. And so kind of relabeling the situation of, I have so much pain that I don't know how to escape yet. I want to find a way to relieve this pain and to know that it's becoming more and more normal to be in that state of suicidal ideation. I hear it all the time in the chronic illness community. Happening a lot with kids, like kids. It's just, and so I think in some ways, normalizing that thought comes in, that desire comes in to release the pain is a normal and a valid desire. And if we can bring more light to it, that there are more solutions so that your psyche can see other solutions, I think it will help. So I think the problem is, in some ways, too much censorship and not enough understanding of what's happening at a root level, that the ideation is just a firefighter part of you, often a firefighter part of you that's just trying to find a permanent way to end the pain because it doesn't know else another way how to do it.
That's such a good explanation about it, and a different framework to look, a different lens to look through in how to understand what we're really going through and shift our mindset.
Yeah.
You said kids are experiencing it at such high levels, which is true. Why is that? Why do you think that is today?
Kids are losing, I think, contact with their sense of self, in that, unlike our generation, they are so engrossed on their phone, social screen time. The sense of self versus non-self is getting really confused in their psyche. They're not spending time literally in their body, outside on the ground, with their friends. They're not in contact where they can feel literally their body and then feel the world. That loss of self over time leads to incredible pain in the psyche, especially for a kid that hasn't had the neural development of their brain. They haven't went through the brain development of identity yet. So their identity is very, it's not formed. And in that lack of formation, there's a lot more room for confusion and for inability to cope. So yeah, I think it's a direct result of too much screen time and not enough contact time with parents, caregivers, loved ones, to develop the identity. So.
That's a good point, because that identity, as it's forming through the screen, like what are they watching and listening to on the screens? right? What is it? I mean, they're seeing all kinds of things today that are very, addicting, first of all. But then, like, this misunderstanding between how life really works versus what I'm seeing in this fake world. I mean, yeah, I grew up, watching some really bad shows as a kid, and they absolutely affected my psyche. There's no doubt about it. There were shows that I watched up that are just so, like, how could would they ever allow kids to what how can this be marketed towards kids? These are cartoons, and they're just like some of the most disgusting, like, I would never let my kids watch that stuff, right? But that's what I grew up on, and it absolutely affected me in a negative way, because you look at my childhood and my teenage years and how I lived, and it was like, oh yeah, all of that stuff affected me. And yet we still have that going on today. It's on all kinds of shows and programs and things that kids are watching, and then parents were just like, we're so busy. It's like, yeah, you're on the iPad, whatever, just keeping them busy. But what are they actually bringing into their subconscious? Are we checking on them, every 20 minutes, making sure that they're not basically being programmed with all this negativity and all these crazy thoughts and ideas? Things flash so fast in these programs. I mean, it's hard for me as a parent to maintain what my kid watches and doesn't, and it's like, it is, as a parent, it's very challenging. And we have things we've implemented that help, but it's not guaranteeing that terrible ideas and things aren't slipping through into his subconscious. I mean, it happens for sure. And I'm like, okay, how do I best deal with that? How do I prevent that? How do I, it's like, get rid of everything completely? Well, no, because we live in a technological world today. And kids, I think they grow up without any technology, are probably going to be at a disadvantage going forward. So, like, have access to technology, but how do we manage it and mitigate the damage that it can do and actually use it as a beneficial tool? That's like what I'm still figuring out,
I think that if we can stay in contact with our kids and ask them, what do you feel in your body after having watched this or done this? Like, get them back into the body. What's their felt sense so that they can keep coming? They can keep a somatic experience in some way while being drawn into this, the screens. Like, after my, if my daughter is like, even when she's like making videos, I'm like, afterwards, I'm like, what do you feel in your body after you've done that for 2 hours? Can you even find your feet? Are you feeling ramped? Helping them to keep that reflection habit going. And that way, I think it helps to develop their discernment. So as they get into some maybe garbage material, they're used to checking in and they can feel like, oh, that didn't feel good. Like for me, I was just on a plane and I watched a movie that I normally wouldn't have watched. It was just a lot of action and it messed with me for hours afterwards. And I could feel during the movie, my body doesn't like this, but I was stuck on an airplane and I just kept it. I went against my feeling because I'm used to doing this, being teaching this. And I think it's just a skill. What do you feel like after that? What's that like in your body? So it's not about complete censorship, but also about development and discernment of how they felt and behaved hours after that experience.
The mindfulness. Yeah, that's so important, right? I mean, that's how we grow as human beings. That's certainly how I've grown over the years, is through that self-reflection, through the meditation, through the mindfulness, and continue to have to do that every day. Asking our kids to do that is such a great idea. I love that. How did that make you feel? Like, instead of turn that off, be like, just watch them, and then pause, and then,
Yeah,
how does that make you
you've
feel
got
right
that.
now, by the way? Like, just getting them in tune with their feelings, their body. That's so smart. I love that.
That's kind of the premise of our whole program is we're teaching people to feel what their activation state. It's called the polyvagal ladder. Are you in sympathetic? Are you in dorsal vagal, which is shut down? Are you wanting to fight or flee? Do you feel frozen? Do you feel overwhelmed? All of that education is actually how we help people heal from chronic illness, but it is also how we start developing that neurological connection back to self. So it's just skills that you can use constantly instead of like saying, oh, great job, you did this. Ask your kid, how did it feel to do that? What was your experience? Sometimes we like to praise them for different things or whatever, but bringing it back to their experience and getting them used to having that dialogue and reflection after lots of things is one way to help. Before I forget, I wanted to mention this because one of the things that I am seeing help with suicidal ideation is a newer technology that maybe some of you know about called transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS. These centers are popping up all over the US. They're basically a brain form of biofeedback, and they are having really good success for suicidal ideation and depression, especially. And I also want to say that I'm not a therapist. All the things I said before were personal opinion, but I am seeing this. And if you're somebody who's listening or you know somebody and you feel helpless, that might be a place to start. It's pretty passive, easy to do with kids or young adults. And it may help sync up the brain a little differently, so different solutions arise for that pain that they're experiencing. So I just wanted to say that.
That's really cool. Transcranial. So what's happening during that process? So
it's just stimulating different parts of the brain that may be overactive or underactive that they've studied that can help with different things like depression, ADD, ADHD, suicidal ideation, anxiety, et cetera. So they're basically turning down certain dials and turning up others to have more of a whole brain stay online to handle what's going on in your life. And, you know, I'm sure it's not a perfect technology. I don't know about a magic bullet for anything, but I do know that it's been pretty successful. And I was surprised reading the statistics myself. And I mean, even in my little town, there's like three or four centers that are popping up in the last year. So they're getting to be more and more popular. So some of the centers seem to be more expensive than others. And it's the same technology. So shop around if one place seems really expensive. So
is this technology you can just buy and use at home, or you have to go somewhere?
Got to go somewhere. It's a little bit more high end, like they test your brain and figure out where the electrodes need to be placed. And I think you do something like, you know, maybe 10 sessions, 20 sessions or something like that in a particular time. So it's like a type of treatment, maybe takes an hour. And so, yeah, I think it's an interesting solution to start to begin with, in addition to exploring, like I said, maybe parts work therapy or something like that.
Have you heard of Evox training, Evox therapy?
I just heard about that, but tell me more because I'm not super
familiar.
I'm just
wondering. I know a little bit about it just because, you know, a lot of the cancer patients I've worked with over the years, like one of the things that I've heard multiple times that they felt helped them as part of their emotional healing toolkit is Evox, E-V-O-X, Evox brain training, Evox therapy. You can find therapists and go and do it. To me, the little research I've done on it sounds kind of similar, but they're not like stimulating your brain with like a device. It's literally like kind of measuring, I think your pulse and some other things through your hand, and then they're talking through things, and then it's basically an audio signal. So it's like it's stimulating parts of your brain and helping to heal certain negative associations you have with people, places, things, traumas, things in your life through like a very gentle approach. It's the best way I understand it. Apparently, people have gotten great results from it. I was just curious if you knew anything about it.
I'm going to check it out. That sounds perfect for my population too. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, here's an article from Harvard that's talking about TMS, transcranial magnetic stimulation. You know, right here, I mean, this is so true, right? Leading cause of disability in the United States among people ages 15 to 44 is depression. Even Harvard's, you know, Adam P. Stern, MD, contributing to the Harvard website, says even first-line approaches such as antidepressants and psychotherapy don't work for everyone. In fact, approximately two-thirds of people with depression don't get adequate relief from the first antidepressant they try. After 2 months of treatment, at least some symptoms will remain for these individuals. I mean, look at the side effects of many antidepressants. Suicidal ideation, right? Like, supposed to help you become not depressed, and for some people it makes them more depressed and makes them suicidal. Crazy. What is transcranial magnetic stimulation? Non-invasive form of brain stimulation, operates completely outside of the body and affects central nervous system by applying powerful magnetic fields to specific areas of the brain that we know are involved in depression. Approximately 56% of people with depression who have tried and failed to receive benefit from medications experience a clinically meaningful response with TMS. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to check it out. That's a great mm-hmm. share. Thank you. You know, depression's a big one people are, you know, facing today. fear, anxiety. I mean, there's so much fear going on, right? How deeply do the things that we watch and listen to affect our psyche and impact our ability to actually feel good in our day-to-day life? You talked about movies, action movies. You talked about, we could talk about music. We can talk about, anything that we're exposed to putting into our minds, whether just on autopilot, it's like end of the day, I'm tired, just gonna throw on a movie, whatever, or the music you listen to. Like, how deeply do those things actually impact our psyche and our overall well-being?
Well, for any of you sports fans out there, when you're watching a favorite game, does your heart rate change at all? Do you feel any excitement when they're about to win or whatever? If your physiology is changing at all, that means that simply by watching that experience, you are producing a biochemical cocktail in response to watching an experience outside of you. So 100%. What we watch, our brain, if we are interested in it in any way, our brain doesn't know the difference between us doing it and us watching it a lot of the time. On the flip side, you can use that same way that the brain works to help it to heal. And by watching positive experiences, visualizing positive experiences, witnessing positive experiences, we also produce that chemistry to heal. And that's the tenet, that's the premise behind brain retraining. We are constantly retraining our brain every day, whether you know it or not, for better or for worse. So what you're putting in, what you're watching is retraining your brain into having certain neural connections and certain chemical associations and output for better or worse. So you've got to decide how you want to live your life because you are constantly retraining your brain.
Yeah, you're excited when your team wins or is about to win or scores a touchdown or whatever. And just think about how pissed off you are, angry or upset or yelling or whatever when they're not winning or doing terrible, right? Or how sad you feel. Like how that deeply impacts your physiology, how it deeply impacts your psychology. It's pretty crazy, actually. I've been watching a show. Have you seen This Is Us?
No.
It's a really good show. It's a good example of like watching something positive, but definitely affects your physiology. I mean, every episode, I mean, my son comes up and he's like, checks my face. He's like, "You're crying, aren't you?" I'm like, "Yeah, I am crying." At least three or four times, like I'll have tears, but they're very often like the tears of joy or happiness or tears of definitely sadness or tears of like something really special happened, and it like brings you to tears because it's like so special and meaningful. You get that in every episode. And
Wow.
so it is really, really a great positive show. And to your point, over the years, like I have stopped being attracted to and watching a lot of these high action, shoot 'em up, aggressive things. Like I stopped watching horror films so long ago because I just was like, this is terrible, Many of the action shows, like I just don't watch anymore. If it is, it's super far and few between, because they're just like once your nervous system, I think, gets to a place of let's say equanimity or pretty close to equanimity, those kinds of shows and music and different things like just throw me off, right? Like I'm like I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to feel like what is it? Like I'm cringing. Like I was watching this new like. This Godzilla show, my son wanted to watch the new one, and I was like, all right, yeah, Godzilla's cool, whatever. It's like Godzilla and King Kong, and so we put it on. 15 minutes in, I'm like, I'm out of here, guys. Like, I can't watch this. This is awful. It's just like blood and guts and loud and terror, and I'm just like, why? Why put myself to this? Isn't even entertaining anymore, So I have a deal with my kids. Like, we're most of the movies we watch together, like a movie night, are gonna be some like true story inspiring thing because I know how impactful that is to our minds and our bodies. It's so much better to watch something like that than some terrible horror thing, Oh, you were muted there for a second.
Hold on.
Oh,
Can
you're
you hear
good.
me now?
Yeah,
Okay.
it just cut out.
Okay. Yeah, I'm extremely sensitive as well, and have zero tolerance for horror film. But yeah, I think when you do get that nervous system balance, that's the interesting thing. You see how at one point in your life, it was like slowly cooking the frog and water, like you don't even realize that that stuff is just massively impacting your system. And so when we do, the approach we use, we recommend that you don't watch things, you don't watch the news. If you're really wanting to retrain your nervous system to heal, you're going to have to cut some of these things out of your life.
What are some of the things you've seen people heal when they've retrained their nervous system?
Good question. You know, every day I'm seeing more things that I didn't realize. And the main thing that we work with is usually chronic infection, like Lyme disease and the things like that. Chronic, even long COVID. We see a lot of mold issues. We see a lot of autoimmune issues. But I've just been seeing more and more strange things, like random digestive stuff and, even just wound healing improving with nervous system regulation. And to me, it makes sense. Like, what's the root of our body's physiological function? Your autonomic nervous system is running every cell and organ in your body. The autonomic nervous system is being targeted and being put back into balance. It's going to affect the majority of our illnesses in usually a beneficial way. And sometimes people heal completely with nervous system regulation alone. Sometimes they add things in to help support their nervous system with diet and supplements and exercise. I think being able to do all of it, that all of those things are affecting the nervous system. So, to me, when people get sick, I usually tell them to let their doctor have that diagnosis. Your responsibility is regulating your body, psyche, emotional, physical state. And the diagnosis is for them to figure out what maybe they can do to support, but it's not for you. That's not going to change how you're going to heal this, because there's a common truth about how the body heals, regardless if it's cancer, Lyme, et cetera. The denominator is usually a similar protocol.
I think the commonality there is the immune system, right? It's whether it's bacterial infection, it's Lyme infection, it's viral infection, it's mold infection, or it's cancer, anything related, like the body needs the immune system on full capacity to be able to fight these things off. And you have symptoms from these, and you feel bad because it's your immune system isn't able to fully do its job properly. And the immune system is directly affected by how we feel, right? It's directly affected by that biochemical cocktail that you spoke about. It's directly affected by our hormones. It's directly affected by if we feel anger or peace, if we feel joy and love, or if we feel, resentment and grief. It absolutely is turned on and off based on our feelings and emotions, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. It's amazing that that truth isn't more understood. It isn't our first go-to protocol when we start feeling bad. Oh, well, how am I feeling today? And how can I shift how I'm feeling? Yeah, we're just, again, we're not programmed into that mindset. I mean, we're getting more and more that trend is happening. But I know for me, when I got sick, I was looking for a different cause. I wasn't looking within. To start shifting it.
Yeah, so what did happen to you? What did you go
Yeah.
through?
Well, many years ago, I started off with a parasite infection in South America. And ironically, I was going through a breakup at that time, a lot of stress and a lot of just absolute emotional dysregulation. And my immune system went down and I ended up hospitalized and thought I was going to die down there, actually. So it was pretty serious. And so, was it the parasite, or was it that I was in so much distress? My boyfriend at the time actually ended up leaving me down there, and my immune system just shut off. And I said, okay, I'm open host for whatever's in here. And that was the beginning of a long history of having chronic immune dysregulation challenges. And then I never quite recovered from that, but I also never emotionally recovered, for years, actually. And so my immune system was off, and I was like a workaholic. I'm not going to feel a type A. And eventually I really crashed because my immune system couldn't keep up with that pace. I was then diagnosed with things like Lyme disease, mold toxicity, viral stuff, all sorts of, the list that you tend to get. And my digestive system was just shut down, but I was in a lot of trauma. And really, to me, it stemmed from my relationship trauma as a child. It just got, the abandonment wound was opened up, and, my body went into something called cell danger response. And this is really what we teach, is that it's really not about the Lyme, the mold, et cetera. Your immune system gets shut down when your body goes into a cell danger response, meaning it's trying to protect you from emotions, toxins, et cetera. And it gets stuck there. And it gets stuck there for people, especially who don't have great emotional regulation skills. So instead of having toxins or pathogens come in and your immune system coming in and taking care of it and then coming back to normal, someone like me with a lot of emotional trauma and suppression, that process gets interrupted and the cells got stuck in a danger response. They couldn't detoxify. They couldn't let nutrients in. The immune system wasn't getting the signaling to take care of things properly. And over time, you rack up more and more chronic symptoms. And the trick is, how do you get your cells out of cell danger response? And that's through multiple things: cleaning up toxins, improving your autonomic function, your emotional state, et cetera, to allow those cells to say, all right, the danger has passed. I can open up and thrive. The danger has passed. How has the danger passed emotionally in your life, with your relationships, not just the physical symptoms, but getting that message on a deep level? And so my journey was learning how to perceive that the danger has passed.
Have you used breath work as part of your journey? Do you like breath work?
Yeah, it's one of the first skills we teach because it's one of the quickest, most direct ways of influencing our autonomic state, of getting yourself into either more of a parasympathetic state, or for some people, because they need it, more of a sympathetic state. There's a reason for both types of states with breath work. So it's a crucial part of, I think, any healing program, any healing protocol, is to learn how to breathe and learn how to send signals of safety through your breath.
Yeah, that's like, I find myself through a day like today, for example, it's just meeting after interview after meeting after interview, jam packed, boom, 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 running from this to that, to my son, to this, to that, to that, to that, where it's like, I have to take a deep breath, between stuff, just to like slow myself down and be like, okay, calm down, keep my nervous, because I can get, elevated, 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 just like get intense. And then, your cortisol's being released, your norepinephrine, you're just like, and you're constantly in that state. It's not fight or flight, right? It's not freeze, but it's an elevated cortisol state of like activity, which is, dampening my immune system a little bit. And so it's like finding that balance throughout the day, finding those little windows. I this thing kind of came to me naturally. Like I found myself doing these deep breaths throughout the day many, many times, just, but there was something that added naturally one day, and now I do it all the time, and it takes it to another level. And I'll just show it to you because it's funny, but for some reason it works so well. Maybe it makes me smile, maybe that's why, but I go
so
or I do that on the out breath, and it's like I immediately feel better, and so I'll be walking around the house and my kids will see me do it and then they'll like smile, and I'm just like
it's an extra vagus nerve stimulation is what
there we
doing.
Go that's what I think it does, right? It's like it's a it little really extra is. Thing yeah mm-hmm. So you're like, you actually know mm-hmm. that is
yeah I mean it's a thing for like somatic release, so you're adding it's in that interesting your body showed you that it needed to let energy out of this part and maybe stimulate the complex through that. That's great.
Yeah. Oh, so you've seen that before, like other people do that?
Yeah. Like it really? Can be it's a somatic.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I thought I was the only one that was doing it. Yeah, I was the only crazy one, but
you're instinctively doing it, which is even better. And what you're describing, Nathan, is what I see as the perfect setup for chronic illness, is this functional sympathetic overdrive. It doesn't look like you're going to be like, I'm not stressed, I'm not anxious, I'm living my passion. And you're functionally in sympathetic overdrive when there isn't this beautiful wave through your day of activity, rest, and that constant full pedal to the metal on the gas can be a setup to causing the immune system over time to just not have the reserves to keep up, and then a crash can happen. So
it's so true. Yeah, you find people that are, and it happened to me actually, a great example of that. I was producing events years ago and just going for months nonstop and, you know, doing my passion, and, you know, I love producing events and I'm helping a lot of people, and we get there and we're in person and it's, you know, these life-changing conferences and expos, and, you know, people are loving it and everyone's saying how much they're, the value they're getting out of it. They love it. And I'm like, go, 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 go. And then by the last day, I felt like I was going to die. I crashed and I went upstairs to the bedroom and I started having cold sweats like I've never had them before. I was getting like tunnel vision. I literally felt like I was dying. I was like, I need, something is going on here. I was like making peace with death. I thought I was going to die. It was really bad. And I was like, go get Romania. And Romania comes up. He's this kind of master herbalist. He checks my pulses. He's a Chinese, traditional Chinese medicine herbalist, and brings me up this concoction, you know, for the adrenals and for the kidneys and for all this stuff. And then I drink it, and like half hour later, I come back to life. And that was like a big wake up call for me, because up until that point for years, I was living that mindset of, I got to work in overdrive 24/7. I don't care if I work 12 hours a day, 15 hours a day, 20 hours a day. I've just got to work hard. I've got to provide for my family. You know, this is what a successful man does, like just push, 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 push. And that's what ends up happening, is you crash. But a lot of people don't learn from that crash. They come back and then they push, 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 crash, push, 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 crash, and then push, 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 cancer, right? And that's what we want to avoid. Or that's what we want to teach people, how to, hey, look, you don't need to get to that point. And in fact, life is so much better if you find those moments throughout the day. I go outside between interviews, you know, I get barefoot on the grass. I do a quick little meditation and Qigong practice. I center myself, even if it's 1 minute or 2 minutes, but I do it multiple times a day. I know what I'm doing is balancing my nervous system and making sure I don't go to the push, 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 crash state.
That's a really beautiful practice and absolutely necessary. And, you know, it's really as simple as, am I living my day like a wave of activity down? Have I done that today? Mm. And if you don't do that, that's your answer, that you're on a setup that might not be good.
What have you found have been the most useful tools for you in your own healing journey?
Yeah, such a good question. I love the morning time, carving out the morning time, getting up earlier than I want, to have literally space where there's nobody needing me is essential. So first of all, I'd say that morning sacred time to find self, because I do believe the root is a separation from self of why we get sick. So a self time, no kids, no work, no whatever. And then in that time, I do lots of different things. I'm not I don't like the same routine. I'm kind of like chaos. So I like to change up that time, but it's carved. So I like to do meditation. I like to do Qigong. I like to do breath work. I like to do my brain retraining. I like to do different things, but it's still that time and it's meant for me. And if for some reason I don't get it for whatever, you know, travel, whatever, it totally throws me off the whole day. It's like, you know, when you've started to watch a movie that doesn't work, it's the same. And so I am letting myself know that I value me and I value that time with me. And the practices, you know, you can do whatever. It's just, you're valuing you. And then the other thing is that I found when I was working a lot, I would start to go into some old symptoms again. And when I sat and talked with my body, it was saying, you're doing it again. You aren't spending any time for you. You're giving yourself all day for everyone else. And so I found that if I made sure I had chunks of time on my calendar that could not be scheduled, just so that this part of me knows I will not cross this boundary time, that's really important. And I might have a super busy day, but I have to have some chunks of freedom that I can see so that these parts of me know that I'm not going to like throw myself under the bus to that extent. So making sure, and in those times, it could be whatever I want to do, but it's reserved for me. It's really important. And it might just be a small chunk. It could be a half hour, but I know it's at least something to come back to self and to, again, like I said at the beginning of this interview, pay attention. How am I feeling? Do I have it to keep going today? Or do I need to go for a walk? It's like a check-in. How am I feeling? Making sure you're getting a good check-in. And I'd say the most recent thing I'm learning how to do is to cancel things. I had such a hard time, Nathan, until recently, subtracting, because you get all these opportunities, your business starts to grow, you're meeting people, you're like, wow, this is great, great, great. And then you get stuck with things that you've planned and you realize your schedule's so full. And I felt guilty canceling. And I realized I can't keep doing this. If I can sense my tank is full, maybe I didn't know that when I scheduled this 3 weeks ago, but it is full because too much has happened this week. Giving myself permission to cancel even really good opportunities, to show my psyche and me, my little girl inside, that I matter more than any opportunity that's going to come. That's a newer phase of my entrepreneurial development.
That's a really empowering and challenging place to be. Mm-hmm. to say no to a good opportunity, right? No matter how successful you are. It's like, certainly for me anyway, it's like I've kind of have been the same way, where it's just like, okay, yes, 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 yes. And then all of a sudden it's like, where's my time? You know, like today I got 7 things back to back to back to back, which I normally don't do or don't allow to happen on my calendar because I value my time so much as well, my personal time. You know, I make sure that I've got that time, you know, between the morning time, the afternoon time, the evening time. That's for me. That's for my family. That's for my exercise. That's for my morning routines. But sometimes things get scheduled where, like, if I don't have that blocked out on the calendar, then it gets filled in with something else. And that's when it can get, like, you start to cross that line, you know? Because if you open up, what's funny is I was training twice a day. Right, so I'd train a couple hours in the morning, and I'd train a couple hours in the evening, and then I'd work through the middle part of the day. And like nothing got scheduled during that except my training as an athlete. When I stopped training in the mornings, what ended up happening is it just got filled with more work. So it's like I'm going to do something. So it's like I just work more now, you know? And so it's like I had to extend my morning time a little bit to be like, nope, I'm going to do more reading. So I do more reading, do my meditation, you know, run the dogs on the bike, like spend a little bit of time if my kids are home. Like I have to schedule that, or otherwise it gets filled with something else that's not necessarily supportive to me. And people who aren't there yet, you know, might look at that and go, oh, that's selfish, or that's, you know, whatever. And it's like, no, dude, that's self-love. And if you can't do that for yourself, unfortunately, very likely you're going to experience the ramifications of that, which very often end up with the people you and I work with are the people that have chronic diseases like cancer and Lyme disease and many others. And so you yourself have to become priority number one. Right? You have to. I was just talking with a client just before this. And basically I said, well, I really want to do this program and I want to, you know, follow this and do the coaching and all that. But I have 4 kids and I don't have time. And I said, like, you don't not have time to do this, right? Like, if you want to be a good parent for your kids, if you want to be there for them long term, if you want to be there as a grandparent, if you want to have the energy and the clarity and the wherewithal and actually not deal with the cancer diagnosis because their interest was prevention, like you don't not have time for yourself. You have to dedicate this time for yourself. Otherwise, you probably will end up, you know, being diagnosed, because we see it. I mean, the cancer rates and the chronic disease rates are just exploding through the roof. Yes, because of toxins, but also because of toxic stress. Yeah. So, I mean, this stuff has to be a priority for you, right? I mean, it is for you. It is for the people you teach or your community. and they get it and they see the results from it, which is awesome.
And it's still very difficult to do. Even with every day, it is a difficult choice, especially if you have an entrepreneurial drive, because you're always getting ideas and all that kind of stuff. And it's interesting. I just want to normalize this. It is still difficult for me every day. And I'm constantly course correcting. Oh, I just went over again. I'm devaluing myself again. I got that idea of that new project and I really don't have it to give to it, over and over. And so I think that the ability to value ourselves this way, again, is something that we are not taught, because we're taught to go to school and work and do all these things. You're not praised in this culture for valuing self and taking care of self. You're praised for achievement and success and things like that. And I find that if I sit with, why am I not choosing myself? It's because the instant gratification of the opportunity of helping somebody is so much more addictive to my brain than the valuing of self choice. It's a delayed gratification with a much deeper long-term gratification, but we're making choices neurologically with dopamine, with getting that quick hit. And so, you know, I just want to speak to that and normalize how difficult this is, even though I might act like I have it together. I have to practice every day.
Yeah. I think on the other end of the extreme is you can also take that too far, right? Where it's like you forget about everybody else and everything else and you only focus on yourself. And at a time you might need that, right? Like for a period of time. But I've definitely seen it taken to the opposite extreme, even in my own life, like going down this, you know, the spiritual rabbit hole, and then getting to a point where it was like, well, then I had no money, no prospects, no opportunities, and I was only focused on myself, and then I was struggling in a lot of ways. And like I needed it for a while, but if you get stuck there, you know, and don't find the balance, then life can definitely be too extreme that way.
Yes, that's so true. And one thing that I see with that similar path is that sometimes with chronic illness, we become obsessed with our self-care, and it becomes this illness identity is like being lived all day long with a million tools and protocols and things, and they're not actually like serving again. And so there is that extreme, and I was in that extreme, as well as kind of the spiritual bypass phase. And again, though, it's an out of balance thing. And, it's something to be looked at, and we do need both serving the world and self. I'm speaking more to my newer phase, which is the entrepreneur that hasn't been able to say no very well and has a million ideas and all that. But I've been on the other end, and it's like, yeah, for me, it's been like a form of greed in different ways, like greed with self-development, greed with spirituality, greed with opportunity. And I don't mean that like, I don't mean it negative in a way, but it is kind of a neurological grasping that we get caught in different ways that needs to come into balance.
Yeah, it's that sense of like, I need more, I need more, I need more, I need more. And it's usually we're trying to fill something in ourselves, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I need more personal development. I need more self-care. I need more opportunity. I need to help more people. And it's like, all of that's fine in balance, right? Yeah. When it like overtakes us and becomes stressful in one way or another. No, I can't do that. I have to take care of myself right now. Nope, leave me alone. Like it's, nope, my cancer needs this right now. And it becomes an identity and it becomes stressful. And then you're actually doing the opposite of what you're trying to do. So I think that awareness is important for all of us to go, okay, where am I at with this? And am I finding balance in how I'm treating myself and taking care of myself and being of service to others? Because we know the only true joy and fulfillment in life actually comes out of serving others, like true fulfillment.
Yeah.
But you can't serve others if you're not also taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you can't truly serve others, you know, it's like you can't give love to someone else if you don't love yourself. You can fake it, but you can't give true love to someone else and like really give that unattached love unless you can really feel that for yourself. So we need both. You know, I think we need both anyway. So your program, Primal Trust, talk a little bit about that, because I think it's pretty awesome what you created.
Thank you. Well, I created the program that I wished I had when I was on my healing journey. And it's a program that has an academy aspect to it. So a lot of learning about chronic illness, psycho, neuroimmunology, cell danger response, why people get sick, how the nervous system works. You know, it's kind of like a mini college course, all on nervous system mastery. And then we also have a community, which is basically live daily classes, usually several times a day, of support of how do you regulate your nervous system. We practice together. We have things like sound healing and journaling and movement classes and Qigong and all sorts of things. And so it's a combination platform all online. We're worldwide in over 60 countries, where you're learning how to get out of cell danger response, how to self-regulate your own biology so that your body can help itself heal. Some people work with providers alongside this process. Some people are literally just doing this process, depending on their resources. And the cool thing is that because there's a community piece and it's huge, we really have a lot of support. I think it's really been quite successful. We have people healing from all sorts of things, and it's a lot bigger than I ever thought it was going to go. And I think it's because it's what the world needs. It's a paradigm shift in how you approach chronic illness with co-regulation, with that community, with the resources that we're all needing. And so, yeah, it's just been great. It's been an honor to be able to lead it, to create it. I've got several people beside me that help me lead it now. And yeah, that's what Primal Trust is in a nutshell.
That's awesome. I mean, what you've created basically just organically, that has just changed thousands of people's lives is so cool. And how you told me it's just basically grown. I mean, mostly from word of mouth. Like, you didn't do like paid marketing and all these big campaigns and all this affiliate stuff. Like, to have thousands of members join a program like yours organically and from word of mouth is such a huge testament to how powerful it actually is. It's amazing.
I had zero business training, and I think that served me, because I just kept creating what do people need, and it made a good product because I wasn't worried about how to sell it.
That's awesome. That's a good approach. That's a good way to do it. So and that's primaltrust.org, is that where people primaltrust.org. Awesome. Well, Kathleen, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. It was awesome chatting with you. The time flew by. Like, it felt like it was like 10 minutes. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Nathan. It was such a rich conversation. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks.